Hey, 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 Toasties! Welcome to this episode of Pyro Toasty Talks, where we will be chatting about all things pyrography, art, running a small business, and all that good stuff. So, as I just said, this is Pyro Toasty Talks. I am Zona, along here with my husband, Brian. Say hello.
Hi.
Here in North Carolina, and on the other side, all the way up in Pennsylvania, is David and Renee. Say hi.
Hi.
Howdy.
This is season 2, episode 4, where we will be talking about decorative materials. Yes. Sorry, I am like high on sugar now because now I've had like some ice cream in my life. But before we get to that, so what are we doing outside of work and art?
Ooh, outside of work.
I'm running for political office.
Oh, this is true. I don't think we've talked about this with y'all at all. Yeah, he is really getting involved with local politics here in our borough, and he is running for borough council. There are a few positions that are opening up, and four positions, yeah. But 5 people are running. So he has a pretty good chance of being elected, but he's like starting his campaign, and we went to the park and I took headshots of him, like really nice headshots. I know, he looks so good. He's been working on his...
Can I get a vote for David campaign button?
I know.
Listen, I can make a print direct page link for you, but there are certain limitations to what campaign spending I can do. So,
because campaign spending is our own personal bank account.
Not just that, but like I agreed not to spend more than a certain amount so that I wouldn't have to actually file reports. And if I spend more than that, by say buying like 1,000 buttons, I have to file paperwork that I don't want to do.
I don't need 1,000 buttons. I just need one.
I want a sticker.
Stickers, reasonable.
I'm sending you pictures of handsome David right now. He looks so good.
I require stickers.
He looks so good.
All right. Pulling up my phone because I require to see said picture.
He looks great.
Well, that's really cool.
That is very cool.
It is cool.
Don't worry, fans of the show. You're not going to see me on national politics. And so I don't have control over any of the controversial stuff. But we're going to talk about zoning rules and...
how to make our local community better. And not in a crazy political way. Things like... can we improve this crosswalk?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Can we get this drug recovery house approved? You know, things like that. So.
And it's everyone we know is like, oh, that's so exciting. How do I vote for you? And I'm like, you can't because you don't actually live in my teeny tiny borough of Pennsylvania.
But yeah.
These are some really good headshots of you, young sir.
Aren't they so good?
Thanks.
You need to put
those in the Discord channel.
I mean, everybody loves some David.
This is true.
Just saying.
I am the favorite host.
Wow.
That's what all the people are saying.
I heard it last week.
The people love it. The people have spoken.
So
okay.
Well, so you're not the only one doing cool things, all right? I'm teaching over at UNC.
Ooh,
so,
stop it. What are you doing? So,
yeah.
Doing my master's degree over at UNC Charlotte.
Yeah.
And as a master's student, I was offered the opportunity to teach middle schoolers. Oh. They're doing it's like a STEM program,
mm-hmm.
and they needed somebody to teach programming. So I had applied for it over the winter, and they had about 40 applicants for it, and I ended up getting selected.
Because you're the best.
Apparently, I'm also like the second best host too. So.
Wow. Chopped liver. We girls are just chopped liver.
We're all tied for second. There's only one best. So I'm now teaching, and that's actually part of my long-term plan, because I want to, when I eventually retire, hopefully get a job teaching at a college. That's why I am going for my master's, is so that I'm qualified to be able to teach.
Mm-hmm.
So that is exciting.
You
that is fun.
Are doing the Lord's work dealing with middle schoolers.
Listen, I love middle schoolers. Middle schoolers are my favorite. I do love them.
I get a good bunch.
Mm-hmm. Except when they're trying to steal his favorite pen.
Oh.
No. You have a decoy pen and claim that it's your favorite and then react and then it's, you know.
Oh no, my favorite pen.
It's like dogs. You've got to give them something to chase.
Do you like your middle schoolers? Are you like, you said they're cool?
Yeah, I've got a pretty good group, pretty competitive. The thing is that they're all there because they want to be there. So yeah. It's not like they're just forced. Well, I mean, some of them are probably being pushed there by their parents, but for the most part, they're all excited to be learning something.
Yeah.
So I have not had a tremendous amount of problems, and some of them are super enthusiastic, and it's been really fun teaching them. So I'm happy.
That's good. A lot of people hate middle schoolers, but I think they're great.
I had mixed emotions when mine were in middle school.
Yeah, well, when they're not yours, it's different.
And now, Brian, on a recorded podcast that will be put out publicly, which one is your favorite?
Students or children?
Student.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you that.
We all.
The answer is yes.
Yes, yeah.
Well, we had a competition the last week. It was, they were doing like a competition day, and I had to, basically what it was they were doing like all these different engineering type projects, and I was given the Tinker Toys. And okay. Basically what, this is really cool. I think you'd really like this, David. I had to build things out of Tinker Toys, and then I had to split my group into two groups. One was in one room, one was in the other. The group that was in the room with me had to write instructions how to build the thing that I built out of Tinker Toys, and then send the instructions to their partner in the other room where there was another box of Tinker Toys, and they had to build that same thing and then bring it back to the first room and see how close they got it. Be surprised how well these kids did. And I did not make simple things. Like, they were fairly, you know, intricate, and they did a really good job.
That's great.
So this sounds like you could write instructions for, like, Lego City sets.
I could. They would all be really boring.
I was going to say, Brian's not the instruction writer. We need to harness those middle schoolers and force
that's
them
true.
To
okay,
so he can design things for Lego City, and the middle schoolers can write the instructions.
Can write the instructions, yes.
Cool. All right, let's pitch this to Lego at Lego. Yeah.
You don't write Lego instructions. They're just pictures, honey.
Like IKEA.
This is true, but I mean, Elliot did a good job with his pictures. So
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. This episode.
Now that we're 10 minutes in.
Yeah, hello.
Renee, are you doing anything outside of the business?
Nothing, I mean, nothing new and exciting. It's springtime, and so we will be spending a lot more time in the garden. This past weekend, we made a significant backyard improvement. So you can visualize this. So we have our carport, and we have a side door that leads out of the kitchen into the carport. And then the back of the carport leads into the backyard. We also have a patio, but it is not connected to the walkway to the carport. So you walk out of the carport, there's grass, and then to the left is the patio. I don't know why the previous owners didn't just expand the patio, so you didn't have to walk through grass to get to it. But that patch of grass, the boys have run into just dirt because they take off running as soon as you open the door to the carport, go potty. They run and they just kick up the dirt. The grass doesn't grow there and it's always muddy. So we bought some pavers off of a Facebook Marketplace from a local guy, and we dug it up, leveled it to the best of our ability, and laid down the pavers. So now we have... a connected carport with pavers to the patio, and now they can take off running without dirt flying everywhere. And I'm still sore from that. We did that on Saturday, and it's Tuesday. I'm still sore. We got it done within an afternoon, so it wasn't like a terribly long job, but just David did all the shoveling to tear up all of the dirt and whatever grass clumps were there. And then we had to haul in bags of sand to level it all out. And then, like, lay the brick. Like, oh my gosh, it was just intensive. But
now in North Carolina, we have inch of topsoil, and then it's just all clay underneath.
We're clay too. And
are you clay? That is the worst to dig up.
It sucks. Yeah. So that's what we did, but now we have other garden improvements and things that we want to do this year, and that's coming up. And then we're also just spending a lot more time outside now that it's warm and things are starting to bloom. Like, we've gone to the park every weekend for like 6 weeks now. And I like to bring my camera because I love photography. So I've just been playing with that. And the frogs and turtles are now out. They are out of hibernation. And it makes me so happy. I know. Okay, so my favorite thing about stupid frogs, I love them. They have like 2 brain cells, and I just love frogs. But my favorite thing is when they're in the water, but their eyes are on top of the water. And so you just see like, doot, doot. Like, you can't see the rest of the frog, mm-hmm. but you see the 2 little bumps, and they're just like, I love them so much.
For those people listening who can't see, Renee is showing us what it looks like when a frog is peeking out of the water.
Their
We're
eyes,
getting a visual
like,
cue.
Their eyes bulge out of their head and kind of sit on top of the rest of their head. So, I mean, it's how they, like, scope and watch out for predators. Like, they can just rest their eyes right at the water level and watch everything.
And but they kind of blend in, right? They kind of camouflage. They almost look like
and
a
so
rock.
And so we're standing there and we're like, are there any frogs here? And it's like, yep, there's one. You can see his little doot-doot. Like, yeah, it's so cute. I just love them. But during the winter, they hibernate. So they're not, you know, there are no amphibians out in the winter. It's very boring in the water. But now things are coming back to life and it makes me very happy.
Which also means that a Renee is coming out of hibernation.
Correct. Yeah. When I can go outside and there are things to do and look at and be happy about, that makes me very happy.
That's good.
Yeah.
How about you, Zona? What do you have going on?
You know, I've been sitting here trying to figure out what have I been doing that's not art related. I'm like,
you've been doing art and art and art. That's what
exactly,
you're
and some more art. I think the only thing that I haven't done that isn't really necessarily art related is really just planning for the arch for the photo shoot, really. I mean, I was talking to someone about teaching a class of women artisans. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's women who are at risk, right?
Yes, that's mm-hmm. It's hard to explain. I don't have the super specifics, and I can't really get into super specifics mm-hmm. about it because of the situation that they're in, but they are at risk women, and the whole point of the program is to teach them skills so that they can basically become small business owners.
They can support themselves.
So, yes.
Okay.
Make them artisans. Mm-hmm. So I know that they have been taught how to like make jewelry, and I believe they were taught like stained glass work mm-hmm. and some other like
that's cool.
crafty things. That's what I was told, and I've been waiting for the organizer to get in contact with me because I was talking to her about it because I told her about being a choreographer, and she wanted me to come in and maybe talk to them and teach them or talk to them about choreography. Mm-hmm. So we were chatting about that and possibly doing that.
Okay.
So that was like the other thing. It would have been unpaid. You know, it would mm-hmm. have been.
Yeah.
It's a volunteer thing. Yeah.
Yes, volunteer. Yeah. That was the word I was looking for.
Would they speak English or would there be a language barrier?
No, it would not be. They were at-risk women. So that would have been something very close to my heart, mm-hmm. which is why I might reach out to her after April when I can dedicate more of my time and my mind to her. I can focus more of my focus on her because right now I really couldn't focus on the program to her. It would be nice to be part of the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that being pretty rewarding and pretty valuable to the community.
I'm always looking for charities and things to give back in a... My soul needs to give back, too. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I love that.
That'd be something. It'd be nice to feed my soul, not just everything else. So.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Cool. But,
well, on to a more fun topic. Less serious. So the topic today is decorative materials. Mm-hmm. And we want to talk a little bit about some of the materials that you use to enhance your wood burning. Now, obviously, if you are a pyrographer, piece that is simply a wood burned piece in and of itself is a piece of art. But I do think that there is something special about being able to add in other types of mediums and using the wood canvas in ways beyond just burning them.
Yeah.
So I think we had a few different materials that we were going to talk about. So we're talking paints, watercolors, foils, gold leaf, acrylic, rhinestones, pens, anything else that y'all can think of. My first question is, when you use decorative materials like these as part of your pyrography, does it add to the piece? Does it take away from the piece? Or does it depend? And if it depends, why?
It depends. It so depends. So I think why is going to be subjective. Correct. Okay, great example. Facebook pyrography groups. They are a place, but a lot of what I see, a lot of what I see are people who are new to pyrography, and they have a lot of, quote, like, basic or beginner, end quote, kinds of questions about, does this piece look okay? I just did my first piece. What does everyone think? And there's a lot of that. And in a lot of that discussion, you get people who have opinions on, like, I think it would look better if you added color, or if the original artist did add color, they'd be like, oh, you added too much color, the pyrography got lost, next time don't use as much color. Like, so people have so many freaking opinions on, should you add color, should you add things, you know, whatever. There are two schools of thought of, like, pyrography purists who think pyrography should just be the celebration of the burnt wood in and of itself. And then there are other people, like me, in the school of thought of mixed media pyrography, and I think that adding color or other decorative mediums to your pyrography just brings a whole new vibe to it. And neither school of thought is wrong. It just totally comes down to your own personal preference. It comes down to what you like about your art, if you really like making bold contrasts between the raw wood and the burnt wood, and, you know, you don't necessarily want to add color because you love the contrast of the burnt wood and seeing what all you can do with burnt wood, that's great. But I just personally love color. Even if I wasn't doing pyrography, I've done painting, I've done watercolors, like, I still love color. So, like, I'm going to incorporate color in my pieces probably no matter what, because I just love color. You can't keep me away from color. So I really love making pieces where color can pop and shine and just adds a whole new level, not necessarily a better level to pyrography, just a different level, just a different vibe. So I say that it depends. There are definitely situations where I have thought someone adding color or adding something to a piece has, quote, taken away from it, because in my opinion, maybe that piece wasn't well balanced, or maybe that piece didn't have enough contrast. You know, like, you can add color and totally overpower something. You can add color and gently complement something else. Like, it every single piece is going to be different, so there really isn't a right or wrong, but yeah, it is possible to overdo it, and it's possible to underdo it. That's just my personal opinion. I say it depends.
What about you, Zona? Do you think it enhances the piece? Do you think it takes away from the piece? Or do you think that it depends?
Yes.
Yes. All of it.
Yeah, all of the above. I absolutely do think it depends. There is no It's not black or white. It is all of the above. It really does depend on the piece. There are some pieces that honestly should not be in color, right? There are some I think look better as black and white, mm-hmm. or maybe minimalist color, maybe just a little bit of highlight, right? Mm-hmm. Versus full-blown color, right?
Right.
And then there's some where you look at it and go, ooh, should probably add some color. Like, that would probably look so much better if you added some color to it. Or maybe a particular set of colors.
Sure. To it.
I mean, we could look at some and go, oh, that would look so great in metallic mm-hmm. colors. Or whatever kind of colors.
When you guys say there are pieces, do you mean subject matter? There are pieces that look better without color. You like, the black bears always look better without color because they just are black. Or do you mean like this particular rendering of this black bear?
Yes.
Is unbalanced in some, is deficient in a way.
That. Like, it's always going to depend. Like, okay. A clownfish, you can determine that a clownfish is a clownfish without color. If it's in black and white, if it's just burnt, you can tell what it is. And mm-hmm. adding color doesn't necessarily make it more of a clownfish, because if your brain already interprets it as clownfish, then maybe you don't, quote, need to add color to it. But if you did add color to it, I don't think that's taking away from anything.
So I guess my question then is, what is the, if it's not about the subject matter, but rather the rendering of the piece itself, what is it that would give you pause?
It comes down to your style. It comes down to your line work. It comes down to the contrast of your stuff. If you are someone who's doing very delicate, light details, you could easily cover up those details with said color if you go too ham, if you add super thick acrylic paint, or if you add really stark white highlights that could definitely look, quote, off, or like it doesn't belong in the piece.
It also depends on like what it is that you use. Like if you did, let's say, delicate shading, you do the clownfish on a piece of maple wood, you do some light shading and you add acrylic paint, mm-hmm. right, versus colored pencil. Those are two very different looks, but acrylic paint is very opaque, it's very dense, right? Whereas with, let's say, colored pencil, you could do light strokes and you could be very light and gentle with it and you could still add color. It's very delicate, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can overpower it with acrylic paint, right? Or something so.
And you mean dense. Overpower by saying, like, it would cover up the delicate shading. That's what you're specifically talking about.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Like, you can, and then that's when adding color, now you've,
like, hidden the detail that you added.
Yeah, you've now undid all that lovely, delicate work that you've done with the delicate shading mm-hmm. that you worked so hard on, because we, as pyrographers, we know how hard it is to get delicate shading where it's just, it's delicate enough that it's light shading where you can still see it.
Yeah.
But it's not so dark that it's like just a blob of blob, right? We know how hard it is to get there. And now you've just covered it up with opaque colorant.
Whereas if you use something that wouldn't cover it up, that would maybe be blendable, like mm-hmm. a colored pencil, or maybe even like a pastel or chalk or something that you could gently rub in, that could be a really lovely addition or accent to said piece. Now, mm-hmm. if I'm doing a clownfish, in my style, I like bold, I like texture, I like heavy contrast. So my imaginary clownfish would not have any delicate shading. I would probably make a really nice thick outline, kind of mm-hmm. maybe cartoonish, of the clownfish. And then in the black stripes of the clownfish, I might stipple that in because mm-hmm. I love stippling, and that's such a fun, bold texture, and then in the orange parts of the clownfish, paint it with that bold acrylic orange. And the bold acrylic, I think, would complement the bold stippling very well. I'm not going for realism. I'm just going for my style. And then once the orange acrylic dries, maybe I'll go in and add some, like, cartoony, comic-y kind of, like, white highlights with my acrylic paint or my white gel pen. And, like, that's a totally different vibe than a nicely, delicately shaded, more realistic clownfish with soft orange color added in. Like, it's just totally different. And neither of them are right or wrong. It's just artistic style. But you will get people who will argue until they are blue in the face about what is right or what is wrong. And it's like, there is no right or wrong, dumb. Like, this is art for a reason. It's art. Like, get over it. But,
you know, it's funny that you're saying that, because I was thinking, if I was going to do a clownfish, I wouldn't do... I'd probably do it... I wouldn't do realistic shading. I'd probably do more... not quite cartoon. I wouldn't do thick outlines. It would probably be line. I'd probably do more of a shaded lines. Probably like a flat orange, but then I would go in once that was dry with like maybe like a metallic orange.
Mm-hmm. Add some, like, shimmer to those scales.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Kind of like, just kind of like almost not quite highlights, but kind of like
adding little depth.
Pops of like metallic orange in there. Just for giggles. It looks might great. Add some like orange glitter, like weird, like I don't know. Yeah, sorry. My mind.
I know.
Just hit the microphone. My mind just went off into like these little tangents. Okay, let me reel it back in.
We're both imagining what our imaginary clownfish would look like.
Right. So back to your question, David. Adding color would be, what is the look that you're going for? Like, what is your brand of art look like? So what look are you going for? Maybe you're going for, that is the thing that you want to highlight.
Mm-hmm.
Like with my piece with Arbor, it is the tree of life in the middle with, like, you've got the tree of life in the middle, and then you have a wreath basically around the tree of life. The only thing I colored in that piece was the tree of life. Mm-hmm. And it's highlighted.
Yeah.
The wreath itself is just basically shaded. And you can tell that it's a wreath. You can tell that it's leaves. But I wanted to highlight the tree of life. So that's what your eye is drawn to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I colored it.
So you used color to the advantage to draw attention to the main thing. Yeah.
Right. So that's how I used color in that piece. And I used metallics for that, for that particular piece.
Nice. I don't think I've seen this piece, so I'm going to have to see it.
It's on my Instagram.
Okay, I'll check.
It's on my Insta, yeah.
So are there particular mediums that work well with wood and others that you think it's best to avoid with wood?
In my opinion, yes.
I think it's more of... there are certain mediums that work well with certain woods.
Yes.
And I think that's more of... there's some woods that are really thirsty, so they suck up... like, if you were using something liquidy, like watercolors, they'll suck up the liquid on the watercolors a lot faster. And then there's some that are just, like, almost water-repellent.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, ew, water! And they just, like, eh. You know, and then it's just this big blobby mess of liquid, and you're sitting there trying to make sure that it doesn't go all over the place. Right?
Yeah. I mean, all woods have their own properties, and those properties work with color media in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I guess let's start with our list, because we can easily go down our list. Okay, so the first general category is paint. Mm-hmm. So we could talk about acrylics, gouache, oil paint, and watercolors. Mm-hmm. I love watercolors. I specifically love handmade watercolors because they are so different than commercially manufactured watercolors. But the world of watercolor in and of itself is so extensive. And I think that there's a lot to play with and experiment with in the world of watercolor. You can get really, really light washes, little light tints of watercolor to add mm-hmm. just a touch of orange to your clownfish. Or you can go bright, like orange dye almost. Like if I got one of the Dr. P.H. Martin's bright orange, oh, that would be so vibrant. And then I could add like an orange metallic watercolor on top of it. And it would be so shiny. Like you have mm-hmm. a wide range when it comes to watercolors.
And then you've got like even the different brands.
From brand to brand is so different. And there are different qualities of watercolor. There mm-hmm. are really cheap ones that are really just chalky filler. They're really cheap quality. Mm-hmm. Then you have really nice ones that are pure pigment and high-end dollars. Like, there's so much. But I love watercolors. I think you need to practice with them in order to get a feel for how they work on the wood that you're using. Because, like Zona said, some woods are thirstier than others. And so some will absorb the water that you lay down on the surface. Others don't, and so that can kind of, it just messes with how your colors will bleed. It kind of depends on the wood grain and the structure of the wood and blah, 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 and that's all very scientific, but basically the gist is different woods react differently. So you definitely need to experiment and get a feel for how the wood you're using reacts with different media. And with that concept, I just want to say, get yourself a piece of wood that you can dedicate to practicing different things on. Like, a lot of people don't want to, quote, waste their wood on practicing or something. Like, that's the view a lot of people have when it comes to, like, experimenting. It's like, well, I don't want to waste the wood. And it's like, stop thinking about it as you're wasting it. Think about it as like you're investing in your own time and learning, and make this your practice piece. Make this your trial and error piece. Like, it is serving a purpose. You're not wasting the wood. You're dedicating this wood to your own time and your own, like, so if you have like an ugly piece of wood or something that you know you're never going to use, make that your practice piece, and then practice different things on that practice piece. And then when it gets full, go outside and sand it down, or if you have a planer, plane it down or whatever and reuse it again.
Okay, so it
there's a lot there. Yeah.
Yes. Well here's a newbie question from my newbie days that I have for that. In that aspect, mm-hmm. right? Because I remember I had that exact same mind frame. I didn't want to spend money on a fantastic piece of wood and then waste it. Like, mm-hmm. nobody wants to spend $20 on a piece of wood and then essentially ruin it, right?
Sure.
But then there's also a problem. I don't want to say problem, but like, there's also a difference with spending, let's say, $1 or $2 on a piece of wood, because there's also, as someone who's no longer a newbie, someone mm-hmm. with a little bit more experience, knowing that spending a dollar and the results of said spending said dollar on that piece of wood, what kind of results you'll get mm-hmm. and what that gives you, right? So we know the results of spending a dollar, like what results that'll give you versus, let's say, spending $10 mm-hmm. on a piece of wood. Because $10 isn't so bad.
Right.
Right. And spending a little bit more money on a piece of wood and practicing on that piece of wood, the difference it can make in when you're using your nib and practicing lines and techniques and such and such and such and such, right? Mm-hmm. But then when you go into, let's say, the store and you're looking at this wall of wood and going, holy crap, what do I get? I don't know my hand from my elbow any of these woods, mm-hmm. what would you say, in your opinion, either one of you, Mr. and Miss Wood over there, what would you say would be a good median practice wood to get? Something in the middle that's not super expensive, not super cheap. What would be a good wood to practice on in terms of, like, whether it's burning or for mediums, like paints?
I think if you're a newbie, mm-hmm. I think the classic wood that most people start with is basswood. So if you're standing mm-hmm. on the wood aisle in a craft store, you're going to have all different kinds of wood options. You're going to have square panels and slices, and you're going to have basswood mm-hmm. and birch, and there's going to be, like, little laser cut plywood cutouts and birdhouses and, you know, whatever, all this stuff. I think the best thing that you could pick from that spread is one of the larger basswood panels, not the end grain, not the stuff with the bark, one of the nice square panels, and something that is not too thin, because in my world, I would want to get the most out of it, and I would want to be able to sand it down after it's full and reuse it again. So mm-hmm. something that maybe is a glue up that's like 18 inches, a square, I don't know, just okay. whatever would be there. But if you're thinking of making your own canvas and you're staring at the wall of wood at, like, Home Depot or Lowe's, mm-hmm. I would say get a poplar board. And it doesn't have to be one of the expensive poplar boards. Like, a lot of the wood at the hardware stores is warped. So, like, you can use a warped piece of wood. It doesn't have to be the nice stuff. It doesn't have to be straight. But if you don't have any saws or anything at home to cut it down, usually you can have someone in the store cut it for you to whatever dimension, and then you can go check out. So that's an option. Poplar's a good wood. I would never recommend pine. Pine is something that is offered at both craft stores and hardware stores. And I see a ridiculous amount of people using pine on Facebook groups, and I just don't get it. There are so many other better options and some that are equal price. So it's not that pine is so, so cheap. Like, there are some pieces that you can get that are the same price as pine, but they're different, or they're better, or they're processed, or they're sanded, or it's a different wood. Like, use that. Stop burning on pine. Pine pisses me off. Like,
I think, well, I mean, I know that when I first started, I used pine, and that was more so just because I didn't know better.
Right.
Like, legitimately, right. I really didn't know better. I will say, if you do go to Lowe's or, like, a hardware store, don't do plywood if you plan to, like, sand it down, because you can't. Plywood, by nature, is basically thin sheets of wood that have been glued together, so sanding it down is not going to work, because you will sand it down to the glue, which you will be burning into, which is a no-no, because fumes, because bad for your lungs. So don't do that if you plan to burn, if you plan to sand down into it. And if you're like either me or Renee, who burns deep, be careful, be cognizant, because you'll be burning into the glue mask. But you should be wearing a mask anyway. Safety first. Solid wood, and Lowe's, by the way, does sell solid pieces of wood. I have bought poplar in a pinch. Mm-hmm. There, by the way, just FYI, if you really needed to. But you could also get poplar from Miss David and Renee.
I was gonna say, most smaller businesses that sell wood products would love to give you their trash for a nominal fee. So, like, if you ask me, I bought a nice cherry panel, can you throw in some pieces of, like, scrap for me to, like, test burn or test watercolors or whatever on? Absolutely. Because Otherwise, they're like, I'm gonna throw them away, or I'm gonna burn them in a fire pit, or you know, whatever.
That's true. That's true. Oh, that's actually a good point. Some lumber mills, if you ask them very nicely, like tree trimmer type places.
It depends on what it is that you want to do with some of that stuff. Same thing with the lumber yard. Like, you're not going to get a finished surface from a rough cutting lumber yard.
No. You're going to have to put in the work yourself.
Which, you know, may or may not be worth it for a piece that you're going to use to test on. But if you know, like, cabinetry, if people do hardwood cabinetry shops, sometimes they've got scrap woods that would have a finished surface that you could work with.
You know. Also, there's those... The Restore, yeah, I don't know if they're nationwide or not.
Yep, but they're nationwide.
They sell a lot of materials that might be finished that you might be able to find something really cheap.
Mm-hmm. You just got to make sure that they're not sealed or treated.
Yeah, like if it's recycled they have to be cabinet doors or something, those are going to have a finish on them. You're going to have to sand them. But if they're raw cabinet doors, the world is your oyster.
Or raw wood, you can find those because we found those too. We've been to Restore and found some really... Some cool stuffs there, too.
So I have another question. When you're planning the materials for your wood for painting, for decorating, what dark wood versus light wood? Are there different materials that are going to work better for like a darker wood, like an acacia or something, versus, you know, like a lighter wood, like a poplar or basswood?
Yeah. So the color of the wood canvas itself. Ooh, this is such a big topic. I could go. This is like my expertise right here. This is all about color. Like this is, I did the color academy, and then I did the
color. I was just gonna say class. Someone did a color academy last year.
I have a whole color. I have a whole color theory course available. That's just my little plug right now. It's not the Color Academy, but it is color theory for pyrographers. I guess I can send the link to you, Brian, to put in the show notes for this episode. But yeah, that's available. Yes. And I have all kinds of different exercises on color mixing, of picking different colors that'll look best on XYZ canvas, the difference between dark woods and light woods, and what colors look best on what, and... The way I define looking best is like what pops the most, what is the most successful at contrast. So for example, Brian, walnut is super dark wood versus basswood, which is almost white wood. If you have a light baby pink acrylic paint, that is probably going to pop more on the walnut than on the basswood, because the wood canvas is darker, and so there's going to be more contrast there. Whereas if you use a almost white baby pink on a white canvas, it's not going to pop as much. It'll blend more, and you could definitely use that in whatever your subject matter is to your advantage. But if your goal is to, well, how can I get this to pop more, how can I bring the most contrast, those pastels are going to look really, really good on a darker canvas. But when it comes to actual medias, that all just kind of depends. It depends on the wood, the kind of wood itself, and then the color of that wood. So like sapwood of walnut has the same qualities and characteristics as the heartwood. So sapwood of walnut is like gray, kind of white, sometimes kind of yellowy off-white, and the normal walnut that everyone thinks of is like that dark brown, and that's the heartwood. Both of them are walnut, both of them have an open grain structure, both of them will react the same to different colors, but the color of the canvas is like the main differential, and that plays a role in how the media works.
What is heartwood versus sapwood?
Okay, heartwood. Okay. So picture like a cookie of a tree, a slice of a tree log. And sometimes when you look at the log, the center of the log is like a darker color. Have you?
Now you're talking about, when you talk about a cookie, you're talking about the round guy.
Yeah, like a log on its side.
Like a cross section of wood.
Yep, cross section, like a round cookie with the bark all the way around. Some woods have a darker heartwood, and that is like the center. That's the center of the tree. And some trees have really dark heartwood and some not so much. And then the sapwood is what is closest to the bark. So if you're looking at like a cross section of walnut is going to have a darker center. And then the rest of it around the edge of the bark is going to be like a lighter white, beige, creamy ivory color. Cherry has this as well, but some cherry that we've gotten has like a big difference, and some of it doesn't have much of a difference at all. Like the heartwood is the same kind of orange as the sapwood, but then we've gotten other pieces where the heartwood is really orangey, really dark, and the sapwood is really, really light. So it does kind of vary species to species and tree to tree, but that's the gist.
Do we have time for a tree diversion?
Sure.
Ooh. We always have tree diversion time.
Okay, so what is actually... The sapwood is the nearest to the living layer of the tree, and the only parts of a tree that are truly, like, alive are a very narrow section beneath the bark. That's where all of the sap, the nutrients, the fluid is moving up and down the tree trunk. And then as you go closer to the center of the tree, the wood is older. It's also less, like, vital, for lack of a better word. Like, it's not alive as much. Trees, since they can't... I'm going to put this as just an other living being's terms. Since trees can't poop, they have to do something with their waste products, and they go into the heartwood a lot of times. And sometimes this causes the coloration in the heartwood to be different. And that's why you might see, like, a lot of sapwoods are the same general color for all trees. They're that same kind of generic wood color, because that is what new tree is. And then the center of the trees will tend to change colors depending on the species and what they're actually
storing. But what do they have to waste? What waste?
Weird chemicals. I don't really know specifically offhand, but like minerals and things that they can't use.
Interesting. I never knew this. So it's
there's special trees in Africa that grow in the desert, and they pick up a lot of silica from their environment, and it gets stored in the heartwood, and that's why, like, they're a pain to work with because they dull all of your tools like instantly, because you're literally cutting through sand. That's like
That's why a lot of those trees are harder. The wood is hard.
Sometimes, yes. I don't want to say all the time.
That is interesting.
That is. I didn't know that. I didn't know why. I just knew that the heartwood and the sapwood and whatever.
And interesting. Poplar tends... Poplar's slightly different. The rainbow poplar color has picked up minerals from whatever the tree is growing on. We still don't... Science
from
still
environmental
factors. Fully understand.
It's not the heartwood and rainbow poplar that changes color. It's the...
Well, it is...
It is, but it is. It's not... Yeah, it's... It could be because this tree grew next to this air conditioning unit for 50 years and has a weird chemical in it or something. Like,
but it's not as poplar left alone would grow a kind of creamy color.
Or that kind of greeny, creamy color.
Yeah. Without a real distinction between heartwood and sapwood.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Whereas maple always has... But it has such a wide, quote-unquote, sapwood that till you get to, like, the true center of the maple, a lot of times you don't really even see it. But it is a darker red. If it ever shows up...
Darker red?
Yeah.
Like cherry red?
Do I have any here to show you? I don't. But, yeah, it's like a red-brown kind of gradient color. Yeah.
I've never actually seen that.
You have. Remember when we cut into Frank's sugar maple?
Yeah, but I don't remember this heartwood.
All right, I'm gonna look.
Okay, you go look.
Ooh,
but
I love this little bit of like nerdy wood goodness here.
Let's wrap up our paint category though.
Yes.
So we can move on to the other one. So, yeah, anyway, so all different paints have different characteristics, and that will play into how they appear on your pieces.
I have an artistic question for you.
Sure.
We had a previous conversation where we were like, well, do we choose a pattern based on the wood, right? Mm. Do you choose a pattern with, like, paints and mediums in mind? Like,
yes.
Like, because that's funny. I'm glad that you said that because I was like, I was thinking there was a pattern I wanted to do, and I was like, okay, I want this pattern, and I know what I want to put it on, and then I want to put this this decorative medium on it. Like, I had a plan in mind, and I was putting it into motion. So you do that also, like, you know.
I know, yeah.
This is what I'm doing with this.
Yeah, because, I mean, almost all of my pieces have color, and even the ones that don't have, quote, color, probably still have white highlight. And I take into consideration the color that I'm going to add because that vision determines what piece of wood I'll put it on a lot of the times. Mm-hmm. Like, so if I have, okay, perfect example. I did a beautiful white, metallic, shiny, kind of silvery magnolia. And I specifically did it on my darkest piece of walnut because I knew that that silvery white would just pop so well. And you know what it did? It did. It was so freaking pretty. But I think part of why I think it's so pretty is because it just pops off of the wood. And walnut darkens significantly once it's finished with an oil or a spray or whatever. And so it darkened even more. And so that made the white, the creamy silvery paint, pop. I don't think, I know I would not have gotten that same effect if I had done it on basswood. Like, it'll still be pretty, sure, but it's not going to pop that way. Like, the color theory of light against dark and light against light is different. Like, now, there are ways that I could have made a white magnolia pop on basswood. You know, maybe I outline it with, like, a darker color, or maybe I add some kind of, like, gradient wash, like paint wash in the background, and it makes it pop that way. But the natural wood itself would not contribute to that contrast. So, but that's something that I always think about.
But yeah, but like especially with that very specific example, like you, it's nothing would have made it pop like that than doing that white shimmer paint. On that walnut.
On that walnut, like, yep.
I had that in my, when I did arbor with the paint, like when I chose to do arbor on that piece of walnut, I had that concept in mind. Mm-hmm. I had your voice in my head thinking, like talking about that concept because I don't usually use walnut because I don't like the darker woods usually. Because it's darker. Because I tend to like lighter woods. Because I like I like lighter.
Yeah. The burn itself pops more on lighter wood.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I had a bunch of walnut and I had it for other pieces, but I chose differently. I chose to do something different on it. But then I had to do the opulence in wood series. And then I found that pattern, and I wanted it on that wood. And then when I was thinking about the pattern and what I wanted to do with it, and then I was thinking about what you were saying, and I was just like, I never tried that, but I was like, I'm going for it. And this is what I wanted. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to do it. And
do it.
This is what I'm doing. And I did the color, and I was like, yes.
I know.
Renee would be so proud.
It worked so well. Okay.
It did. It looked so good. It really did. It looked so good.
With shiny metallics is so underrated. And I can't get this through to people, no matter how many times I talk about it in Instagram posts or stories or the Timber Doodle or whatever. People just don't buy the walnut as much. And I wish they did because I love how well the metallics, and not just silver or gold or white, like any of the chrome metallic paints pop really well, especially on Christmas ornaments. So if you get those darker walnut Christmas ornaments, and then you're putting like a silver snowflake or a gold Christmas tree star, or like, that is just so pretty. It just, it's so beautiful. And people are just like, nah, walnut, can't really do much with that. It's too dark for me. Meh, pass. And I'm like,
I really think it's because it doesn't suit most people's style of burning.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I know. I wish it did, though.
Now that I've tried it with Arbor, I mean, I think I have some walnut ornaments. I was going through my stash. And I have to play with it. I have to play with the walnut ornaments that I have. Because I did do some walnut ornaments, and I don't think I did them justice.
Mm.
And I think that's part of my, I think it's kind of like user error.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that could be why some people haven't found the way with the walnut.
Sure. That makes sense.
So I think I have to figure out the way, basically.
Yeah.
But I think now that I figured it out kind of with Arbor, I think I might have.
Do it. The chromes. The chrome watercolors look so.
And I think that's the other thing. I think it's figuring out the right watercolors to use. Like, you can't just use just any watercolors.
Mm-hmm.
Just any watercolors or any paints on it.
Yeah.
It has to be very specific ones.
Yeah.
That's the other thing about using watercolors. That's also partially why you have to use certain, getting to know your paints or your mediums with the woods and playing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because certain paints, certain mediums won't work well with certain woods for different reasons, whether it's too dark or too light.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just not the right formula. It's too translucent for certain woods, or it's too chunky, or it just the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
It could be if you're using handmade watercolors, it could just be the way that it's made or that formula.
Correct. That maker's
That maker's formula just for whatever reason just does not work well with that particular wood species or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Well, let's move into gold leaf and foils.
Gold leaf
and foils. Our next category.
I started playing with those.
Yeah. Okay. So I played with some foil. I have never done actual gold leaf, but I got a thing of foils a couple of years ago. And I just don't think it's for me. I returned them.
Really?
Yeah.
The foils?
Yeah. Okay. So, like, they were the thin foil sheets that have, like, parchment paper between them. Yeah, something like that. And I had to use, you know, you have to use that glue, and then you have to be really careful to, like, because the foil is, like, paper thin, and it can just wisp away, and if you touch it wrong, it can, like, stick to you and fall off. Like, it was too messy for me, and I couldn't get it the way I wanted it. And I was like, I don't have the patience for this. I would rather just use gold metallic watercolors and be done. Absolutely no. So I returned it. I stopped using them. I didn't have the patience for it.
Well, fair. Now, the gold leaf, it's what I found the most frustrating part for me personally was finding the right glue.
Oh, yeah.
That was the part that frustrates me the most in terms of using foil and gold leaf. Finding the right fragging glue. But I think I found the right glue this finally.
Oh, that's good.
Now, yes. I had to find the right sticky glue.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other glue that I found just wasn't sticky enough to make the freaking thing stick.
Yeah, that's a whole thing in and of itself. Like, what glue do you use? And it's like, okay, well, some gold leaf makers have their own glue that comes in the kit, right? But, like, most of them don't, and you can't just use like a glue stick or Elmer's glue. It has to be a special glue, and girl.
But I found the right glue, and you just stick it, and then I found that it looks really, it works really well.
Renee, you were talking about gold tinted or paints that have that same kind of shimmer.
Mm-hmm.
What is the advantage of using the gold leaf or the foils over using the metallic paints or the tinted paints.
Look, I think it does give it a different look. Like, I have chrome markers.
But they don't appear the same on the wood as gold leaf does. You can tell something is gold leaf when you look at it.
I would hazard a guess, Brian, that the main difference is the metallics are made up of fragments, little glitter bits in the paints, whereas the gold leaf foil, in theory, could be like a single smooth piece of metallic highlight. Like, it's not
refracting light from all the
It doesn't look like glitter. Bits. It looks like solid metal.
It has a look.
At least that was what I thought.
But even with, like, the chrome gold marker that I have, it's a paint marker, but it has gold. It's gold chrome. That looks different on wood than gold leaf does. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I found the gold leaf so frustrating, and I didn't have the patience for it, so I just gave up.
Do you want to tell the world what the final glues that you liked was? Because... So part of Renee's frustration was trying to find the glue, and everyone she was asking about it was like, no, the glue I use is like my secret sauce to why my stuff is good.
Yeah, there was this one girl that just absolutely would not tell me, and I was like, okay, you're not my people because you're gatekeeping this shiz. This was a few years ago now. I know.
I don't like people who gatekeep.
Yeah, I'm not about that. Like, just tell me.
I don't like people who gatekeep. Yeah. Like, that's really frustrating. Why do people gatekeep? Like,
I don't know. Well, they do it to secure their to secure their business, right? To secure their
But like
their
I'm gonna take away from art. Your business. Like, get over it. Like, I know.
Yep. But anyway, what were the glues?
It's in every industry.
What are the glues you guys like so that other people that want to try foils don't have to beat their head against the wall?
The one that I did end up liking was Stuart Semple's Stickiest Stick. Yes. Have you tried that one?
No.
Put it in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. Do that that works. What's your glue?
The one that came in this kit. Well, this kit is...
Oh, yeah. See, it came with the kit.
Mm-hmm. This one... What is this? This is... Chemo? I think this is chemo. But apparently, Deco Foil?
Stop it. Is it... Let me see. Is it the puffy one?
No.
Okay, because I got the deco foils, and it's actually one of the things that we use in the Color Academy color kit. It's the deco foil, and that brand has like a puff glue that comes in like a squeezy bottle, and I thought that would work really well because it's the same brand for the same foil, and it doesn't dry hard. So like you squeeze it onto the wood and it's kind of 3D and you think, okay, like Elmer's glue will dry relatively flat, but this didn't. Mm-hmm. It dried in the shape, so it dried as a little hump, but it never like hardened. So I put the foil on and it took the foil, but then you could like imprint it with your fingernail and it would dent in. And it's like, well, that's not what I want, because if it gets knocked up against something or in packaging, whatever, like, I don't want it to... I wanted it to be flat and rock hard.
Well, I also tend to use a little brush to, like, flatten out, like, dab it and then...
Yeah.
Brush it. Well, I also... But I tend to use a brush on most things because I just dab and brush. But, yeah, but I found... Yeah, but I found that one because I found foils. I know that, was it Artsyville is another one. I haven't bought it. I can only seem to get it. Well, I haven't personally bought it, but you can only seem to get it from a particular website. Again, blanking out on the actual name. It will get into the show notes. That sells deco foils.
Okay.
I've bought foils from them, but I just haven't bought the glue. Mm-hmm. I can't seem to pull the trigger on the glue because I think the glue is pretty expensive for like an 8-ounce container.
Yeah.
Before a 4-ounce container, I think it's pretty expensive where I can find, trying to find cheaper ones for. It's one of those, do I really want to spend $25 for a 4-ounce container when I can spend cheaper type of deal? So I hate to pull the trigger on it, so
yeah. The thing that we try in the Color Academy kit with the foil that I send is a glue pen. It's like a writing pen, except it's glue. And that glue dries in the way that it remains sticky, so you can apply the foil. And it's just a little pen, so it goes in the pencil box with everything else. And those work okay, but I found that sometimes, like, because it's like a little pen, it's just like you're coloring in a little area that you want glue, but it can apply too thin. So then even if you let it dry for a few minutes and you come back and you put the foil on, it can be spotty because, like, in those thin areas, it's, like, absorbed into the wood. And so then you have to do, like, a second layer, but the foil's already on top of it, and it doesn't always take a second layer very well. So, like, it can be kind of finicky, and I didn't really enjoy that. Yes. But it's an option if you're willing to put in the patience for it, but I was like, nah.
I don't like, personally, I don't like the pen ideas on the glue. I'd rather use a brush. Mm-hmm. I actually found that I like the jar, and I found that the brushes that they use for gel nail acrylics is the best brush.
Ooh, interesting. I love that.
And they're really thin, like they're not wide, and they've got short bristles.
Interesting.
And they wash really easy with soap and water.
Nice.
And they're cheap as hell on Amazon.
Okay. Good to know.
Best brush there is. And you use you can get like from the 99-cent store those mesh strainers that you put in the bottom of the kitchen sink. Mm-hmm. The sink strainers.
Yeah.
Flip that bad boy upside down in a jar. Use that to wash your brushes too.
Oh,
like, acts like a little scrubby.
Yeah,
that's what I use on my paintbrushes.
Oh, that's cool. I never even thought about that.
Yeah,
nice.
Add a little, like a drop of dishwater, a dish soap to the water in your, in the jar with your,
nice
brushes. Mm-hmm. Instant. Well, not instant, but I mean it helps.
It just clean your brushes. Oh, that's so cool. Mm-hmm. I'll have to try that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Rhinestones.
Rhinestones.
I've never used rhinestones, but you have, so tell me about them.
Yes. Rhinestones. Shivani's also using rhinestones in her stuff.
Hi, Shivani.
Hi, Shivani. Hopefully you're listening. B700 glue and rhinestones. Just a little teeny tiny dab. If you can get the one with the pinhole applicator.
The glue?
The glue.
Okay.
Because it's a needle. It's almost like a needle point.
Okay.
Because it's a little teeny tiny. I mean, or you can sit there and put it like on a paper plate or something and then use like a toothpick.
Oh, yeah.
Just to dab, because you only want like a teeny tiny dab.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be real careful about how much glue you put on there, because when you put the rhinestone on, you want to gently push it down. And the last thing you want is like this big glob of glue.
Oh, to come out from around it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you had, because Shivani actually asked me this one time and I was like, I don't know. Have you had any problem with the rhinestones dulling if you spray a finish over them?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
But that's why I don't put finish on top of the rhinestones.
What if you put a finish on top of the piece and then the rhinestones?
That's what I do.
Okay. Okay.
But does that pose a problem, because then it's not sealed over? Like the rhinestone's not sealed over? Like, does that run the risk of them falling off?
But that's why you use B700. The glue makes a difference. That's why you wouldn't use regular the glue. The B7000 is very specific. It is a rhinestone specific glue.
But it works well on wood.
Yes.
Okay.
It is made for like wood and ceramics.
I was going to say, once you seal it, the wood's not going to behave like wood anyway. It's going to behave more like
a smooth surface.
A plastic or a ceramic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you seal the wood. Then you use the B7000, and then you put the rhinestone on. Because then you do dull it, because then it will dull. and you it, or it like it rounds, like, because if you brush on a sealant, the whole concept of the rhinestone is that now it's got those, it's got the facets.
Yes.
A brush on is now going to cover up the facets, and now you've just rounded it. And I mean, which is also a look, because you've got the rounded.
Yeah, I feel like that's not my down. Look, but it is a look. Yeah.
Do you, I've seen some artists, inset them into the wood. They, like, cut a spot for the rhinestone and then set it down into the wood.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do any of that, or just glue on top?
Sunshine Mary does that.
Sunflower.
Sunflower, I'm sorry. She does. Sunflower Mary. She does. I have not done that. I want to. I actually just got some rhinestones that I may try that. I plan to try doing that on to see if I like the way that looks.
Okay.
If it's something that I would want to try. But she also gets some really cool, like, rhinestones and stones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she uses, like, gemstone cutouts and stuff, like agate and all sorts of stuff.
I've also been kind of looking around, like, to see if I come across anything really cool like that that I might want to use.
Mm-hmm.
I know I might have some in my jewelry making stash.
Yeah.
But I just don't know if I want to give it up to a piece, because
sacrifice it.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to sacrifice it to that, because I might want to just hold on to art. I might, you know. I mean, I have some things that I'm hanging on to because I want to make a piece of art for myself, and maybe I'll put it in that.
Yeah.
Might do that. But yes, I thought about doing that because that looks really cool.
It looks very precise and looks like something I don't have the patience for. It just looks too finicky, and I feel like I would be very frustrated.
I get that. I get that.
Yeah.
I feel, though, like I've seen that, and I've seen some of your pieces, and I've thought that maybe it could look really cool on one or two of your pieces.
But probably. I mean, I get it, though, because if your style of art is very fluid, then you don't want to be working with materials that require you to be very precise. Whereas you're much more of a precision, like whereas Renee, I think you're more of like fluid motions and I think that plays a role in what mediums work best for you.
Oh, for sure. Not a criticism, not a...
Oh, yeah, like no, it's not a criticism.
You know, or anything like that. Just, I would be so surprised, like, if Renee came up and said, hey, look, I did this. I'd be like, I'm sorry, who are you? Come again?
I love the concept of rhinestones because I love glitter. I love shiny shinies, but I just don't think I have the patience for it.
I can see you doing a peel and stick rhinestone.
See,
you give yourself a bedazzler.
See, but the problem with those is that they look like peel and stick
rhinestone. I know. They don't look the same.
True. I can see her doing like a peel and stick for giggles.
You can get a bedazzler and yourself a nice denim jacket.
I think if I had a bedazzler,
they had the heat stick ones.
I would bedazzle everything in the house.
They have heat the
poor
sticks.
Dogs. The poor dog. The dog's collars.
Would you get like a denim snood for the dog and bedazzle it?
I think Jack probably wouldn't forgive me because he hates jackets to begin with. He hates wearing clothes, and especially if I were to put something like girly on it, the look on his face, mother, please.
Ugh. Well, it's denim, so at least it's that.
Right. Like, as if he would know, but yeah. No, you put a sweater on Jack, and he doesn't move. He's like, he just freezes up. He absolutely, and then he'll pout. He will actually pitch a fit and go to another room, curl up in a corner, and pout because you put a sweater on him. And it's like, Bubba, it's for your own good. It's 20 degrees outside and snowing. You're naked. You have to wear a sweater. Like, because I shave them, I don't bring them to the groomers. We just shave them here at the house. And if you need a shave, you need a shave. And sorry if it's winter, but you got to wear a sweater for a couple of weeks, buddy. And he's just like, I hate it. And then whenever you remove it, if you take the sweater off a couple days later, he's like a naked free man. He does his zoomies all over the house. He's like rubbing himself all over the furniture. He's like digging into the couch cushions, rolling over. Like, it's like he's like shaking it off and like getting his scent, getting his stink all over everything again. It's like he's anointing himself. He's like, oh, thank God. He lets you know that he's so happy that you took his sweater off. And it's like, you're ridiculous. Whereas Shiloh doesn't care. Not a care in the world. Shiloh would be the one to do a bedazzled jacket on. He would just be so grateful. He'd just be like, thank you, mother. I love it. Shiloh.
We expect an update on the next podcast about Shiloh's denim jacket, bedazzled jacket.
All right, I'll have to find
I expect a picture.
I'm sure everyone will get a picture if that happens.
Thank you. Thank you. Discord. Be prepared.
All right, did we talk about pens?
We'll see.
No, we did not.
All right. So I think the last item on our list is pens.
Okay.
Oh, well, there's also, like, pencils. Pens and pencils.
Pens and pencils. I like gel pens, but I have learned that not all gel pens like me. Some gel pens will clog very easily. Like, the tips of them will clog. And I think that's just because of the surface of the wood. You're getting micro sand, like sawdust and sand and gunk that kind of builds up in the tip of the gel pen. And sometimes it can just ruin the pen. You know, you can try to clean the tip of the pen, or, you know, sometimes I will like disassemble the pen and like blow on it to try to like dislodge anything that's stuck in the little rolly bit in the tip of the pen. But sometimes it just
I write on my hand.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'll write it on my hand. I'm, like, licking it, like, trying to get it to, like...
Ooh.
You've never done that? Like...
No.
Lick the tip of the pen to try to get it to... Like, and sometimes the gel pens just get ruined so easily. But I do really like them, especially the glittery ones. I just wish that they worked a little bit better for what I want to use them for. What brand do you use? The brands that I have an off-brand from the dollar store, and then I have Arteza. The Arteza ones don't seem to hold up very well for me.
Arteza has glitter pens?
They do.
That, oh, no. There's, I sent you a brand that I'm drooling over, but there's another brand that I've been drooling over that I've been side-eyeing because they have glitter pens, like apparently mammoth-sized glitter pens.
Ooh.
You have to share which ones they are with the audience.
Well, okay.
No, trade secret. I will share. They don't get that.
I'm going to gatekeep it. Trade secrets. I'm going to gatekeep it. No. I will share the brand. I will also caveat this with I have not tried it personally, so I cannot attest to how good or how well or...
Not well.
Good or bad that this brand is.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fair.
The brand is Grabby.
Oh, yeah, Grabby.
Apparently, they have, like, a glitter pen set that is, like, really big. Jumbo glitter pens.
I'm looking it up right now.
I've been staring at them. They are, like, jewel-worthy.
Oh.
But I've been looking at reviews, and some people are saying that they're better, and some people are saying that they're not, and some people are saying, like, they're good, but if you're, like, professional, don't get them. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of, like, on the fence about whether I want to, like, try it or not.
Mm-hmm. I would only try them if they go on sale.
So that's also the other. Well, I got a coupon from them, so I'm also kind of like, I'm thinking about
sure.
it.
Sure.
Well, it's one of those.
If
things.
You ever try it, let me know how they go.
Yeah, glitter pens, and I'm drooling. I know. I'm just drooly. But in answer to your question, the one I use is Sakura.
Mm-hmm.
The Sakura Stardust pens are the ones that I like.
I had metallic. Oh gosh, I don't think they were Stardust.
Stardust and Moonlight.
Okay.
Those two I like the Sakura lines. Okay. Yeah, I like the Sakura brand.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that I got.
I use and the I do white like pen, the white Sakura pen as my highlight pen for a long time until I switched. Now I use the Uniball white pen for my highlights. I like the Uniball a lot better than the Sakura one.
I do. Mm-hmm. Why?
It goes on easier for me, and I feel like the ink lasts longer, whereas the Sakura ones are like, the pen is thin, and I feel like they did not last as long as my Uniball ones.
Now, when you say last, are you talking about, like, they run out faster? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
That's just my personal opinion.
In terms of, like, because you said that they you were having problems with clogging.
Yeah, so the Sakura ones, I got a white set that came in different sizes. Like, the tips had different sizes, and the smallest one almost stopped working immediately because I think it got clogged and it just couldn't dislodge. So I felt like that was a waste because, like, perfectly good pen, first use, and it stops working. The fatter one, I think I went through two of them. So I liked the fatter one, the larger one. But that was before I discovered the Uniball one. So then I switched. And I think the Uniball ones are cheaper. You can get like a 12-pack for the same price as a normal pack of the Sakura ones.
Probably a 0.7.
Yes, 0.5. That sounds about right. Something like that.
I think 0.5 is the size that I like the best. We like 0.5 and 0.7 pen science. Yeah. I do like, do you like pen, in terms of, let's say, watercolors, out of curiosity, pencil, tube, or pan?
Pan, tube, then pencil. Oh, that's my, interesting. That's my order. I love the watercolor pans. I do like having a tube, but I always use too much out of a tube. Whereas if it's in a pan, it can't go anywhere, but I can run out of a tube. And this has gotten to the point to where I have multiple palettes and I have watercolor left over that I didn't use, but I don't want to wash it down the drain because it's a significant blob. So then I leave it and then I have multiple palettes and like, it becomes a problem sometimes, and then I gotta wash them anyway, and it just feels like I'm washing my extra paint down the drain.
Is it, can you rehydrate it and use it for another project?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even when the when the watercolors dry, just a little bit of water and they're like, good to go.
There is talk, I've heard conversation from some artists in some groups about some brands that once they dry, they don't act the same once you rehydrate them. Mm. But that was like, I forgot what brand they were talking about, but it was like some high-end brand that I would never get anyway. Oh, it was okay. Like, some tube that was like $40 a tube that I would never buy. I'm exaggerating.
Yeah.
I'm exaggerating.
I mean, I would be pissed though if I paid that much for a tube expecting it to work normally and then it doesn't. I'd be pretty upset.
Right. Well, yeah, I'd be upset about that too. But again, it was, I forgot what brand. I remember I just looked it up and I was like, well, I wouldn't pay that much for that tube anyway. Mm-hmm. But it was some ridiculous brand. And again, they were talking about it and I was just like, how much do I really believe it?
Yeah.
Right. You need to test it out. The way that they were talking about it, I was kind of like, kind of, you take it with a grain of salt. Just like on anything on Reddit or any talk group, you're just kind of like, well, how much do I trust what you say? Because I don't really know you.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. I'm going to take what you say with a grain of salt because,
yeah.
I mean, this is your opinion, right? But, I mean, that's a very good point, though, with the tubes. I mean, I literally will take a toothpick with my tubes and, like, dab it onto, like, a
palette,
whatever, a palette, and just like literally mm-hmm. like ding. And I will just sit there and yes.
Yeah.
And I'll actually start with the cap.
Oh yeah, I like to
start with the cap, and then I'll go into the tube, and I'll sit there and cry because I have to go into the. I'm like ridiculous.
I do that with acrylics and gouache too. It's good paint.
Exactly. In my head, I'm like, I pay good money for this, mm-hmm. and I don't want to waste a daggone milliliter. Exactly. Yeah. But I probably go, if I had to put those three in order, handmade pan.
Yes.
Pencil tube.
Ooh, that's spicy. Mm-hmm. You do like your watercolor pencils. I mean, I have them, I've used them, but they're just not my favorite. But you like them. You use them a lot.
The reason I would choose my pencil over my tube is because I don't want to have to pull out the box, and I don't want to have to pull out the palette to mess with the toothpick. And because with the pencil, it's just the pencil, mm-hmm. and then I can just take the water brush, and just do that, or I could just take a little pot of water and with a little brush and just do that.
Yeah.
So I'd rather use a pencil.
Interesting.
Plus I can just kind of layer on top. I can layer different colors on top and then color it.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of like the pencils. But it's like handmade, but that's why I specifically said handmade watercolors. If it's a regular watercolor, then it's pencil.
Mm-hmm.
Two. But I don't think I actually have any regular watercolors.
Huh.
No, I have metallics, but I only use those for one thing, and that's it.
Interesting.
Yeah. David, did you find the maple?
I found a piece that sort of shows it. But
it's just normal brown. It's not red.
It's okay, so it's not a great piece, but I cut off the best portions of it for showing this. But you'll see, like, that's your normal maple sapwood, is all that white, and then this is the heartwood, and it can be very
it just looks normal brown. Normal brown to me.
Right. Well,
Here, take it away.
Can you send us some pictures to put up in Discord so that people can see what you're talking about?
Sure.
When this airs?
Yes. I will find something good for you and send it your way.
Because that sounds cool. I would love to see a red maple heartwood. That just sounds really cool to me.
Part of the reason it doesn't get used very much... I need to get closer. Yeah. Part of the reason it doesn't get used very much in industry is I find hard maple, which is what this occurs in the most, moves a decent amount with moisture. And the heartwood tends to get cracks. I don't know if you can see me. Beneath my fingers, but it tends to be a portion of it that cracks pretty aggressively during the drying process.
Oh,
and so they just cut it out. And also, when people think of maple, like they think of this nice, clear,
the creamy white. Color. Gotcha.
And so they just don't bother. Like, they cut around it in the logs.
That's interesting. Well, I guess that would make sense.
Yeah,
but that's interesting. Okay,
but I think it's beautiful. If you get one that's not all cut up, I think it's really pretty.
Pretty.
Any final thoughts on decorative mediums?
Are there any mediums like that we didn't talk about? I just kind of threw up the ones that were like off the top of my head. I was just trying to think, was there any other ones?
I'm sure there are. We didn't really talk about gouache. We didn't really hit on color pencils.
Chalk.
Chalk, pastels. Like, there are more. There are others. Nail polish.
Maybe this needs a part two.
Yeah.
You can do a part two. I mean, you did a whole color academy.
I did. I'm blinking.
Yeah.
All right. I think we'll put in the notes a possible part two to this, depending on what the people want.
Sounds good to me.
You should put it out there. Do you guys want a part two?
Yeah, we'll ask in the Discord.
I felt like Zona was asking now. And yes. It's like, what are you waiting for? Like,
Well, I mean, I kind of was, but I mean, here we are.
Our listeners can't talk back to us in the...
Listeners, if you didn't just shout yes in the middle of whatever social situation you're in right now,
I'd be very disappointed. I think this was a good episode. Good wrap-up.
I think so, too. Cool.
Any plugs?
If you live in New Cumberland Borough in Pennsylvania, vote for David Wilson in the coming election.
Okay, David. No political plugs.
Fine.
I think we'll allow this one.
This one. One and only. No political plugs.
We'll be in our first juried art walk.
Ooh, so people can go
our
see you?
Our first juried art show.
Yay. That's right.
Is our first juried show.
We're going to be in King's Drive, which is hosted by Festival in the Park.
Yes.
Which is an art show that they do annually here in Charlotte. This one is the newer of the two. And this is a very... well-known, well-respected art show in the community, and we're really looking forward to it. So if you're going to be in the Charlotte area, what's the weekend that we're going to be there?
May 3 and 4.
All right. We'll see you there. In the meantime, you know how to find us. We're on Pyro Toasty Talks on Instagram. David and Renee are It's David and Renee on Instagram. Zona and I are BZ_Furfur. We've got a website, pyrotoastytalks.com. Discord is in, the link for Discord is on the website. Come give us your ideas, give us your thoughts, give us your feedback. Buy yourself a t-shirt while you're there. The t-shirts help fund the overhead costs of running the podcast. And stay toasty.
Stay toasty.
Toasty stay.